The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parsha is Parsha's Baalei Sicha. However, those of you who were here last week will recall that in Parshas Naso we gave a shiur on the Korbanos HaNesim, on the sacrifices and the gifts that the Nesim, the leaders of each tribe, brought on the beginning with the day that the Mishkan, the sanctuary, was erected and inaugurated, which was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, in the second year of the going out of Egypt, in honor of the new Mishkan, the new sanctuary, and the new Mizbeach, the new altar. And then the Torah goes into detail as to what the gifts were. And the gifts were all identical. For example, it states Korbanei Karis Kesev Achas, that there was a bowl which was made of silver, Shleishim Umeya Mishkola, the weights of 130 shekel, Mizrok Echod. Mizrok was like a round basin of Kesev, also of silver, Shivim Shekel B'Shekel HaKodesh, the weight of 70 shekelim. Shneim Aleim Seles, both were filled with a fine flour, Belula V'Shemen, mixed with oil, olive oil, a mincha, for the sacrifice which is known as a mincha, a meal offering. Kaf achas. There was a, generally we say a kaf is a spoon or a ladle, but from the Medrash it seems like it was a fork. It was kaf achas asor zahov. There was this ladle or this fork which was made of gold and the weights of 10 shekel. Melei ktoris, which was full of incense. Parechot ben Bokor, there was a male bull, a year old. Ayel Echot, a ram. Keves Echot, and a sheep, one. Ben Shnosei Leola, and these were 1 year old, and this was for the, these were for the Korban Ola, the burnt offering. Siris Imecha Lechatos, there was a goat for the sin offering. Ulezeva HaShlomim, and for the Shlomim, for the peace offering, Bokor Shnai, there were two cattle, Elim Chamisho, 5 rams, Atudim Chamisho, 5 male, 5 male goats, Fosim Bnei Shono, and then there was Chamisho, 5 sheep in their first year. These were the gifts and the sacrifice that each one brought. And each one brought one nosi liyim echod. Each one brought his on one particular day. And being that there were 12 shvatim, 12 tribes, therefore there were 12 nasim, 12 heads of each tribe, who was known as a nosi, a prince. And therefore this was spread out over a period of 12 days. Rashi explains to us some of the deeper meanings and intentions of these gifts. And he said that the general intention was to be representative of the main pillars of the world. And the reason for this is because the Mishkan, the sanctuary, was like a creation of a world within itself. And therefore Rashi explains how these gifts related to Adam HaRishon, the first man, and to Noach, and to the 70 nations of the world, and to Abraham, and Yitzchok, and Yaakov, and to the giving of the Torah, and to Moshe, and Aaron, and Yosef, and so forth. But the question that was asked is that, why does the Torah have to repeat over the same identical gifts 12 times for each nosi. It would have sufficed to say it once, and then after that just say that v'chein osu, and this is what they did. Each nosi brought his on his own days. We know that the Torah doesn't waste words. And this has made Parshas Nosa into the probably the largest parsha, the largest sefer in the Sefer Torah. So on that, the Medrash tells us, because besides the general intent of these gifts that each one had, there also was a personal, an individual intent. Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov had told all of his 12 sons what would happen to them, what role they were destined to play in history from that day until the Bias HaMashiach, the coming of the Mashiach. And each one had a very specific role to play, and therefore each one brought his gifts also with a individual intent which corresponded to his own particular character and role that he was going to play. And last week we started to go into the Nesiim, and we spoke about the first three. There were four camps for Klal Yisrael, with three tribes and their princes in each camp. And the first camp was Degel Machne Yehuda, known as the Camp of Yehuda. And that was in the east. And there was Yehuda and Yisachar and Zvulun. And we spoke about those three last week. Yehuda represented Malchus. From him would come kings of Israel. Yisachar represented Torah. From him would come the great Rosh Yeshivas, Rosh Sanhedrin. And Zvulun, from him would come the great Machzike Torah, those who supported Torah. Zvulun was, they were great in commerce. They used to go out to the sea. Their territory in Eretz Yisrael was along the sea, Al Sfas Hayom. And they would make a lot of money, and they made a partnership with Yisachar, with his Torah. This is what we spoke about last week, and we said that we will endeavor to try to finish all of the 12 Shvatim, if possible, before the end of this month, which we are going to continue this Wednesday evening, and hopefully, Yetz Hashem, next Wednesday also, and we'll see if we can finish. This evening, we will take the next three. So, we go back to Parshas Noso, and we're on Bamidbar Zayin, Pasuk Lamed. Bayim Harvi'i, the fourth day was Nosi Livnei Ruvain, the prince of Ruvain, Elitzur ben Shidei Ur. His name was Elitzur ben Shidei Ur. Now, here we're coming now to the second campsite. And this was known as Degel Machnei Ruvain. And in his camp, there were three Shvatim. There was Reuven, Shimon, and God. And they were Shni Miso'u. They were the second camp to move when the camp of Israel would move from one place to the other. And, as the Torah tells us in Parshas Bamidbar, in Perek Beis, Posuk Yud, that they were Teimono. Their campsite was on the south side. In the center was the Mishkan and the sanctuary with the Oran HaKodesh and so forth. Reuven, just to give a little introduction into who these three were, Reuven was the firstborn of Yaakov, born to him by Leah. Shimon was the second born to Yaakov, also born to him by Leah. Now, the third was God. It was Reuven, Shimon, and God. Actually, Levi was the third son, but Levi is not counted here. He didn't marched together. He had his own campsite inside, and he was always separate, and he was not represented here amongst the Nesim. We might ask the question, if Levi wasn't represented, so then there would only be 11 sons, not 12. Why is there 12? The answer is because Yosef was split up into two Shvatim, his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, who would be the third one? The third one was not the next son of Yaakov. Not Levi, not Yehuda. Yehuda already was, but it goes to God. God was the Ben Shvi. He was the seventh son born to Yaakov, and he was born to Yaakov not from Leah nor from Rachel, but from Zilpah, which was Shivchas Leah, the maidservant of Leah, which Leah gave to Yaakov. If you recall in Parshas Vayetze that the Seder HaTolodos, the way the births went was Reuben, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, the first four sons, and they were all born from Leah. Then Rachel gave to Yaakov her Shivcha, Bila, and she gave birth to the next two sons, Don and Naphtali. So that these were the sons 5 and 6. And then Leah gave to Yaakov her Shivcha, Zilpah, and the first one that was born from Zilpah was God. So that was the seventh son. So the three that made up the next machne, the next campsite, which dwelled on the south of the Mishkan, was Reuven, his firstborn, Shimon, the second, and God, that was the seventh son, who was born to him. The first two were born to him from Leah, and the third of this was born to him from Zilpah, the maidservant of Leah. The Medrash tells us, why did Reuven come next? Last week, the Medrash, we brought from the Medrash to explain the order of why Yehuda went first and Yisachar second and Zvulun third. So now, why was Reuven Zohar to come next? Because once we finished the first campsite, and they had reasons for priority, so next came Reuven, who had the priority of being the Bechor, the firstborn. Reuven, besides the general intention of all of the gifts, he had his own particular individual intention of the gifts. What was that? What were they? The Midrash tells us that Reuven became famous for two acts during his lifetime. He had many, many acts, but when we say famous, we mean very, very famous. The first was Hatzolos Yosef. Reuven was the one who was responsible for the saving of Yosef's life. And the Midrash tells us not only was he responsible in that act for the saving of Yosef's life, but also of saving the brothers from being shefei damim, from being murderers of an innocent person. What was this case? So we'll go back to Parshas Vayeshev. The Torah tells us just 1 minute. In Perek Lamed Zayin, starting from Posuk Yud Ches, Vayirei Semerochek, Yaakov had sent his son Yosef to find out how the other brothers were doing. They had the sheep in a certain place, and they saw him coming from the distance of Eterem Yikra Valeya Misnakloi Selam Isoi. Once they saw him, they started to conspire against him to kill him. Now they had their reasons to kill him, and their reasons were not totally justified, but there certainly was some justification in it, because these were all tzaddikim. They were all very, very righteous people, and they weren't outright murderers. And we have gone into that at length in Shu'urim and Yosef and his brothers and these parshas. But for this evening, let it suffice to say that they had their reasons. Vayemru isha lochiv. So one said to the other, Hinei balach aleimes alezebo. This one who has all types of dreams, visions of grandeur, because Yosef was dreaming where he would become king of all of the brothers, and they knew that Yehuda was supposed to be the king. Vatol lechu v'nargehu. Let us go and kill him, v'nashlicheo b'achas aberis, and we'll throw him into one of the pits. V'omarnu chayero achlosu, and we will say that a wild beast ate him. And we'll see what happens with his dreams. Vayishma Ruvain. And Ruvain heard what they were saying. Vayatzilehu miyodom. And he went and he saved them from their hands. He saved him from their hands. Vayoma, and he said, Leina kenu nofesh. Let us not kill a person. Vayima alehem Ruvain. And Ruvain said to them, Al tishpechu dom. Do not spill blood. Throw him into the pit, into this pit here in the wilderness, but let not a hand harm him. Now the Torah testifies, Yehuda's strategy was is that he would come back later and take him out of the pit. Reuben's strategy was he would take him, come back later and take him out of the pit and bring him back to his father. And then the story goes on that they put him in the pit, and then Reuben left, and then they decided, why should they leave him in the pit? They can sell him. And there was a whole caravan of Arabs that had come along, Ishmaelim, so they sold him, and Benkach or Benkach, Yosef ended up in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. This is the story. Now, this act was an enormous act in the role of history. Because Lulei Zos, and not Reuben saved him, but they would have killed him like he wanted, like they wanted to. There would not have been any nitzkiyus, any eternity for Israel. Because Yosef was the main Yorish, the main heir to Yaakov, as the sages tell us. And he was the Bal HaBrochas, the Brochas which were given to Avraham, later to Yitzchak. And Yitzchak wanted to give them to Esav, but with the intervention of Rivka, gave them to Yaakov. The main Brochas were given to Yosef. If you look in all of the Brochas that Yaakov gave to all of his sons, the word Brocha is not mentioned by one son, except Yosef. And there it's mentioned many, many times. And it says, Birchas Hay, and your brochas will be even greater than the brochas of your parents and your grandparents. And Yosef was the one who was to carry this on. Aside from the fact that Yosef was the one who was to sustain the whole family during the years of the famine. So had Reuben not intervened, history would have been changed forever. There would have been no eternity to Klal Yisrael. The Medrash tells us in Medrash Rus, which we just studied on Shavuos, says that many times people do great things, but at that time they do not realize just how great they are. And it names a few. This is Medrash Rus Rabba Perikei. And therefore, the Medrash is telling us, Omer Bishok Barmelian, Vaakosav Lelam Decho, Shim Od Meisa Mitzvah, Yasena Belev of Sholem. Whenever a person goes and does a mitzvah, he should do it with a great enthusiasm and with a full heart. Because he might not know just how important it is, not only now, But in the greater picture of all of history, what is this? Why is this coming in here in Rus? Because when Rus returned with her mother-in-law from Moab to Eretz Israel, and they had nothing to eat, they were destitute, and she had no entree to any future being in the situation that she was, and especially compared to what she had come from. She was the daughter of a king. It was Boaz who opened his hands to her, and he brought her in to his home and to Israel. Alternately, from there came out Malchus Israel, because from there Dovra Melech was born, and Shlema Melech and King Solomon was born, and the Melech HaMashiach. But when Boaz went to help her, he didn't think he was doing much, yet he was changing the scene of the world. So the Medrash tells us that when a person goes and does a mitzvah, he should do it with great enthusiasm and leiv shalem, because he might not think it's much, but it could be something very, very great. And it brings three examples on this. And one is from Reuven. She'ilo haya Reuven yedea she'akadosh baruch hu machtiv alav vayishma Reuven vayatzileu miyodom. And Reuven would know that when he went and said, do not hurt the lad, and he wanted to save him, if he had known HaKadosh Baruch Hu would write that in his Torah, he would have put Yosef on his shoulders and he would have carried him back to his father. And the same thing, Moshe didn't want to accept the leadership of Klal Yisrael in his dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the burning bush, because he was afraid that Aaron would feel bad, because Aaron was very, very great and he was his older brother. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't worry about Aaron. He says, Hinehu Yitze Likrosecha, he will come out to meet you, V'roachon, and when he sees all of your honor, V'somach B'libay, he will rejoice in his heart. Now, that's what Aaron did. But Aaron didn't know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to write this in his Torah. That this is what he was going to do. He says the Naran would have come to greet Moshe with a whole band and orchestra. And had Boaz known that when he told Rus, take whatever you want from here and go and take to the, go where they're roasting the barley and take a little oil and eat and be satisfied, had he known HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to write that in his Torah, in the Sefer of Rus, he would have come out with beautiful steaks for her. Then the Medrash says, he says, Reb Chaim v'Reb Yeshua disachnim b'sher Reb Levi m'sho'ova ha'yo adam eis a mitzvah hanovi keshva. The old days, when someone would do a great mitzvah, the prophets would write about it. That's what we have in the Tanakh. Akshov sho'odam eis a mitzvah mi keshva. Today someone does mitzvahs, we have no novi, who writes about it? We have plenty of biographies, but who writes about it? So the Torah, the Medrash says, Eliyahu keshva. U'melech ha-mashiach va'akodesh baruch hu chesim al yedehem. When a person does a mitzvah today, Eliyahu writes it, and the melech ha-mashiach and ha-kodesh baruch hu, they sign it. And that's what it says. Oz nidru yirei Hashem ish al rehu. And HaKadosh, when two people speak and they speak good things about Yerushalayim, they speak about Gemilas Chesed, about Divrei Torah, by Yakshev, it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens and it's written down. So, firstly, from here we learn what the Medrash tells us, that when a person goes to do a mitzvah, he should do it with a full heart and enthusiasm, because he doesn't know ad heichan advarim magim, how far reaching his deed might be. Reuben didn't know, but Reuben was saving the future of the world. Secondly, it wasn't easy what he was doing, because he had to stand up against 9 brothers. There were 10 there altogether. Then there was Yosef, and Binyamin was home. So he had to stand up against 9 brothers, and these were Giborim. They were all Hevra, they were all strong and very determined, and they had Paskin, they had decided this is what they might have to do. That's why Reuben had to use a strategy, not return him to his father, but put him in the board, in the pit, and then later on he'll come. So it was not at all easy what he was doing. Why did he do it in particular? The Chazal tell us that he was fulfilling his role of being the Bechor, of the firstborn. Midrash says, and Rashi brings there, he said, Ani Bechor, v'godol shebekulam. I am the firstborn, and I'm the oldest. And the oldest and the firstborn must take responsibility. Lo yitla hasir chenelabi. The responsibility will rest with me. And I have to do something. Really, he was fulfilling his name. Because when he was born, Leah named him Reuven. Why? She said, Reubeni. Rashi brings there in Parshas Vayetzeh from the Gemara and Brochus. Ru Bain means Ru Beni, see my son. See how different my son, my firstborn, is than my father-in-law's firstborn. Her father-in-law's firstborn was Yaakov was her father-in-law, Yitzchok was her father-in-law, and the firstborn was Esav. He says, look at the difference between my firstborn and my father-in-law's firstborn, Esav. Esav sold the firstborn birthright willfully to Yaakov, and after that he wanted to kill him for it and take it back. Reuven really lost his firstborn birthright to Yosef. Yaakov always considered Yosef his firstborn. That was the firstborn from Rachel. So it was taken from Reuven by force. And not only he didn't try to harm Yosef because of it, but he was willing to go and risk his neck to save Yosef. So this was really engraved in his name. Reuven, Reubeni, see the difference between my firstborn and my father-in-law's firstborn. Now, how was this brought out in his korban, in the gifts? So, as we mentioned last time, the Medrash brings many, many, many different examples. We'll only be able to cite a few. We said that they brought Karas Kesef. This was a bowl out of silver. This is called a ka'aro. The Medrash says, "Al tikre ka'aro el akeres." Ka'aro is written with the same letters as akeres. Akeres means the mainstay. Shohi Reuven iker hatzolus Yosef, shuhu posach v'hatzolat chilo. Reuven was responsible for the Hatzolah, for the saving of Yosef. And this is Merumish. This he had in mind when he brought the Karo. Because the Karo are the same letters, written with the same Hebrew letters as Ikur, Akeres. He was the one who was mainly responsible for this. Dovar Acher, another intention he had. Akeres, Karo is the same word as Okarto. Akarta means to uproot. She'okar machsheves echov. He had to uproot
the conspiracies of his brothers. He had to stand up against 9 strong brothers. So he had to uproot what they wanted to do. The word uproot is found in the word of Kaara. This is what he had in mind when he was bringing this bowl. Shleishi mumeya mishkolo. It was the weight of 130 shekels. When he said leina kenu nofesh, these were the words he opened up with. He said, lo nakenu nofesh. Do not smite a person. The beginning of each word, lo nakenu nofesh, is with a lamed, a nun, and a nun. Lo is a lamed, nakenu with a nun, and nofesh with a nun. That adds up to 130. Nun, nun is 50, and 50 is 100, and lamed is 30. That's what he had in mind with the mea ushleishim shkolim, that it was the weight of 130, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remember what he said, leinakenu nofesh. Mizrokechot shivim shekel. Then he brought this bowl, which was 70 shkolim. What does the number 70 represent? Actually, we brought this last week, but in a different context. The number 70 represents sod, secret, because the numerical value of sod is 70. Samach is 60 and Vav and Dalet is 10, 70. This was to remember that even though he told them, throw him into a bore, into a pit, but in his heart, concealed in his heart, was the plan to come back and save him. So this was in recognition of the sod, of the secret that he held. Shneim aleim solis. It says that when they brought the kara and the mizrok, the bowl and the basin and the bowl, they were both full of soles, of fine flour. So what does it mean they were both full of fine flour? The Medrash says that he gave two etzos. He presented two proposals. One was, he said, Leina kedonofish, do not kill him. And the second proposal he made, Hashlicho yisei alabor, throw him into a pit. Both of those etzus were full of life, to bring life to yourself. Don't kill him, throw him into a pit. Both were to give life to him. This is what he had in mind when they were shneim aleim soles. Both of these utensils were full of a fine flour. Flour, the kemach, represents life. This is why the Medrash says that it says in the Torah twice the word Hatzolah by Reuven. First it states, Vayishma Reuven Vayatzilehu Miyodom, and then it later states, Leman Hatzilehu Miyodom. Twice does it use the word Hatzolah to testify that with both of his etzes, both of his proposals, he was intent on saving Yosef. Asor Zohov, the calf was the weight of 10 shkolim. What does the 10 represent? That he saved 10 brothers from the hate, from the sin of shvichas domin, of murder. Because had he not intervened, so then all 10 brothers would have been involved in the Shvichas Domi. And it states Asor Zohov. It was gold, the weight of 10 shekel. The Medrash brings that there's a gold which has a color very similar, a certain species of gold which has a color which is similar to that of blood. This is what this represented. Malea Ktoris, the calf, the spoon of earth, was full of Ktoris, full of incense, Keteres always represents tzaddikim, always represents the righteous. What does this represent? So the Medrash tells us something very interesting. It says, Malei Keteres. One would, superficially, when we learn this parsha, we would say that they were showing that the brothers were wicked people. Even though we see that through them their brother was sold and they wanted to kill him, therefore they must have been wicked people. Love. No. El tzadikim gemurim hoyu. They all were righteous. And they had never committed another sin in their lives except this. How do we know this? Because when they later on had trouble with when Yosef was the king, and they later on were having all kind of trouble with him, they didn't know he was the king, and they kept finding their money in the sacks, and they found the cup, his golden cup, in their sacks. They said, "Vayemri isha lochiv, avol ashemim anachnu." We have committed a sin, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is collecting it from us. Shoyim mafash v'shim ba'atzmum lo me'ira lehem tfisus mitzrayim v'lemotza lezebel vat. They couldn't think of anything else they had ever done wrong that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should come and treat them this way, except the selling of Yosef. Umitei genusim sipar hakosef shivchon. And that's what the Torah wants to tell us, that this was the only Aveda that they ever had in their hands. And even this Aveda really brought goodness to Klal Yisrael. Why? Because through this it brought a schus to Yosef and to all of Klal Yisrael. Through this Yosef became the king. And through this he was able to sustain the whole family in Egypt during the famine. This is why they were sold by the brothers, because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do something good, he finds good people to do it. When he wants to do something bad, he finds bad people to do it. Since we see that what came out of this from Yosef was good, this means that they were good people. So therefore, this is what it means, Malei Ktores, that even though they did this, they were all full of Ktores, they were all full of the incense of righteousness. All right, these are a few of the intentions in regards to that. What was this? We said that Reuben was well known and famous for two deeds. What was the second deed? The second deed was as Reuben became well known and famous for tshuva, for repentance. Reuben had committed a sin. If we look in Parshas Vayishlach, Perek Lamed Vov Posuk Chof Ches, states, by right after Rachel died, on the way back from the house of Lavan, Yaakov was taking his family and going back to be reunited with his father Yitzchok. Rachel died. By Hibushkein Yisrael Ba'oratzahi, when they were in this land, Vayelech Reuven went, Vayishkav es Bilo Pilegesh Oviv, and he took the concubine of his father Bilo, and he laid with her. Vayishma Yisrael, and Yisrael, does Yisrael, is Yaakov, heard of this? And then the posuk ends abruptly. There's not even a period, there's not a safe posuk, it ends. And then immediately it starts to talk about Vayibnei Yaakov Shnei Mosa. There were 12 sons of Ibn Yaakov, and it starts to itemize all of the children. Now what happened there? Now it would seem that he had committed adultery with his father's Actually, she wasn't really a pelegish or concubine, but this was Bila. This was the maidservant. This was the maidservant of Rochel, which Rochel had given over to Yaakov as a wife. So it was the wife of Yaakov. It would seem that he committed adultery with his father's wife. How could he do such a thing like that? Especially Reuben, the Bechor, the firstborn, and the Kulam Tzadikim, the all righteous. So the Chazal tell us it was a different story altogether. Altogether was a different story. Except the Torah charges him with the sin of adultery because of what he did. What was the story? So Rashi brings he brings for the Gemara and Shabbos. Kshemesa Rochel, when Rochel died, Notel Yaakov mitosai, shohoyis and asunatodi ba'el Rochel. Yaakov always had his bed in the tent of Rochel, because Rochel was Akeres Abayis. She was Eishes Yaakov, she was his favorite wife. And the whole reason why he went to the house of Laban was to marry Rochel. And the whole reason why he worked for the 7 years was for Rochel. He ended up with Leah through deceit. So he always considered Rochel his main wife. So his bed was always in the tent of Rochel. When she died, then Yaakov took his bed from the tent of Rochel, Benos de Ba'el Bila, and he moved it to the tent of Bila, who was Rachel's maidservant. Bar Reuven. Reuven came enraged. Reuven was the first son of Leah and the firstborn. Vitova Elbain Imai, and he stood up for the disgrace of his mother. Omar Ima Chais Imi Hayisat Sora Li Imi Shivcha Sachais Imi Teit Sora Li Imi. He said, if my mother's sister was the constant thorn in her side because she had to compete with her sister for the favor of Yaakov, her maidservant also should be the thorn in my mother's side, because till now she had to compete with Rochel, but now that Rochel died, so Leah should become the main wife. No, now Yaakov went and he moved into the tent of Bila. So the maidservant also is going to push my mother out. And he was enraged. So what did he do? So he went and he took the bed and he moved it to his mother's tent. This is what he did. So it was seemingly something very innocent and very admirable. He stood up, Tava El Bain Shel Ima. He went and stood up for the shame of his mother. The Torah severely chastises him for it. And not only that, but it writes that he committed adultery with Bila. Why? What does one thing have to do with the other? It's very interesting. Because the Torah says, what is the chet? What is the aveira of adultery? Adultery is not merely promiscuity, where you take another woman. But adultery is where you break the unity between man and his wife. It's different than all of the other promiscuities. The main reason why the Torah is so much against adultery is because you are breaking the unity between a man and his wife. Because a man and a wife is considered echot, one, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu places his name on them. And if someone now comes in between them, so he is destroying the totality of man and the totality of Hashem's name. This is what adultery is. So the Torah considered that that's what Reuben did. Because if Yaakov wanted now that Bila should be his main wife, Yaakov came between Bilo, excuse me, Reuven came between Yaakov and Bilo, and he took his mother's bed and exchanged it for Bilo's. He came between Yaakov and Bilo. And therefore it states in the Torah, Vayishkav es Bilo Pilegeshoviv. He committed adultery with Bilo, the wife of Yaakov. This is what the Torah always tells us, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's medaktek im tzadikov kechut asaro, that the Torah is exacting with his righteous ones like the breath of a hair. So this was considered by the Torah and by Yaakov as a major, major chet. Because of that, Reuven became an outcast. And Yaakov wanted to drive him out. And he wouldn't be counted amongst the sons. And his children would not be counted amongst the sons. Reuven spent years doing tshuva. And he became known as the Baal Tshuva, the one who repented. And because of that, he was forgiven. That's why the Chazal say immediately after, there's not even a safe posuk, and end of the sentence, it states, Vayibane Yaakov Shnei Moso. Yaakov's sons were 12. Reuven was counted in the same as all of the rest. And he did not lose by this because of his tshuva. Therefore, he also brought his korbonis and his gifts with this intention. It states that just like when a person does tshuva, it's this HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers the greatest sacrifices, the greatest korbonis. So he had in mind that these korbonis should be for his tshuva. It states, Ulzevach Shlomim Bokar Shnayim. For the Shlomim, he brought two Bokar Loshen Bikur. Bikur means Shechokar Vedorash. Chokar Vedorash means that he investigated and he thought into it. So the Shlomim Bokar Shnayim, the Midrash says like this, through his great introspection and his great wisdom, he did these two great deeds, the saving of Yosef and the tshuva. Because of this, he became a sholem. He became he returned to totality, v'nimna im echov, and he was counted together with his brothers. So that's what it means, ulezevach shlomim. The shlomim is a certain type of korban, but it's called shlomim because it brings totality. Bokar shnayim, the two episodes which he was mavaker, that he looked into with his great wisdom. And this is what is meant, that at the end of the Sefer Torah, Moshe gives brochas to all of the sons of, to all of the tribes. And when he comes to Reuven, he says as follows. This is in Zeisa Brocha, Posuk Vov. Yechi Reuven v'al Yomesh. Reuven should live and not die. V'hi Mesov Mishpor. And his children should be counted in. What does this mean? Yechi Reuven. Reuven should live v'al Yomesh and not die. Yechi Reuven. Reuven should live v'ameh sheachi Yosef, because he brought life to Yosef. V'al Yomesh, and he should not die, because of what he did with the bed of Bilo, because she also tshuva, because he did tshuva. V'hi mesov mispor, and his children should be counted out in sheyibonav b'minyan shara shvatim l'chol dover, and his children would be counted in together with the rest of the children for everything. So this gives us now some insight into Reuven and his korbonis. The next one was Beyemach Kamishi Nasil Levnei Shimon, Shlumeel Ben Sirushadoi. Next came Shimon. The Medrash says, Loma Zoha Lahakriv Acha Reuven. Why did Shimon come after Reuven? What was his chus? So the Medrash says, because both of them saved members of their family. Reuven saved Yosef, and Shimon, who did he save? Shimon saved Dina. It was together with Levi. When did Shimon save Dina? So this is a story also in Vayishlach. In Vayishlach it states in Perek Lamed Dalet that when they came to the place of Hamor and Shechem, Vateitzei Dina bas Leah sheyolda leYaakov lirayis b'vnei Oretz. Dina, who was the daughter of Leah, she went out to visit the daughters of the land. And Shechem, the son of Hamor, Hamor was the Nosi Oretz. Hamor was the king, and Shechem was the prince, his son. He saw her, and he took her, Vayishka veisei leyaneho, and he violated her. And then he fell in love with her. And then he decided that he wants to keep her and he wants to marry her. So he went together with his father to talk to Yaakov with the whole plan. Give me the Yalda, give me the young girl. She was a very young girl at that time. Actually, she was very young because the Gemara says Shimon and Levi at that time were only 13. So she was probably only about 12 years old. And give me the girl and I will give you an enormous dowry for her, and we will become like one nation, we will trade with each other, and so forth and so on. And it says, Yaakov shoma ki time es dina bitay uvonav hoye b'mikneo basod. Yaakov heard that they violated and they caused impurity to his daughter Dina. V'hechrish Yaakov arbaim, the other brothers, when the other sons were not here, so Yaakov remained silent until they came. Then they came and they presented their proposal. So it states, "Vayanu b'nei Yaakov v'shchem v'shamorovi b'mirmo." That the b'nei Yaakov, the sons of Yaakov, answered Hamor and Shechem with deceit, because ashatime es dina achisam, because they had caused impurity to their sister Dino. And they said, "Your plan is a good plan, but we can't do it because you're not circumcised. You'll have to become circumcised, and then we'll do it." So they agreed. Then it states, "Vayivayim ashlishi b'yeisim ko'avim." It was on the third day when the pain was great of the circumcision. "Vayichu shnei b'nei Yaakov, Shimon v'Levi, achei Dino." Shimon and Levi, the brothers of Dino, went. They took their swords, and they came to the city, and they killed every male that was there. Now here, they had risked their life, their lives for her, because to walk into a city, two people, and to start killing everyone in the city. And it's true, all right, they had just had circumcision 3 days later, but still, they weren't all sleeping. It was a very dangerous mission. And not only that, but we see the enormous nekoma, revenge that they took. They took Hamor and Shechem, and they killed both of them by the sword. It also was a tremendous azus, a chutzpah. That's why Yaakov was so upset. They went and they killed off a city, and they killed off the king, and they killed the prince. And then they took Dina, and they left. Then they went to the city Asher Timu Achesam, which violated and profiled their sister, and they took all of the sheep and the cattle and the donkeys and everything that was in the city and everything that was in the fields, and they took everything that they owned, and they took all of their children and all of their women, and they took it all with them. They were for law and order. They want, this is the way you deal with things. See? This is what is not known as a war of attrition. Eh? Yeah. Could use a few Shimon and Levi's today. At any rate, this is what they did. Yaakov wasn't happy with this, because he said, now the whole countryside, they'll hear what you've done, and I'm just one person with a family here of 70 people. They'll come down on us. But then, so they said, what are they going to make? A prostitute out of our sister? At any rate, we see that they risked their lives Shimon. We're speaking of Shimon now. Levi also was there, but here was Shimon. Shimon risked his life to save his sister Dina. Therefore, he was Zohar. He had the merit to follow Reuven, who had saved his brother Yosef. But there's a distinction between the two. The Medrash says Reuven saved the life of Yosef. Shimon didn't save the life of Dinah. Her life was not in danger, but rather the purity of Dinah. If you'll see consistently, the Parsha keeps saying Asher Timei es Dinah Achesum, that profaned, she violated the purity of Dinah. And the Medrash says, from here we see that Shimon, and together with Levi, had a tremendous, an enormous isnagdus. They had an enormous opposition to tuma, to impurity. We see the revenge they took. They went, they said, they went and they profaned our sister. They were prepared to kill everyone. They wiped out the whole town, the whole city. There was nothing left of it, virtually nothing left. And they said, "Akazaino, this is the way we're going to allow our sister to become." Because of that, the Medrash says they had a special identity with the Mishkan, with the sanctuary. Because the sanctuary also represented Kedusha, with an enormous opposition to Tuma, to the impurity, to promiscuity. The fact is, the Midrash says we see this also with the adulterer and adulteress. When there's an adulterer and adulteress, a proven adulterer and adulteress, it was through the Mishkan that they could lose their lives. And now we understand also why Levi was involved, because Levi was always, they were the ones that were set aside for the Kiddush of Israel. Because of that, so it states that Shimon, in his gifts, he had in mind to bring his gifts in honor of the sanctity of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary. So the Medrash goes through it. We will mention a number of things. For example, Shleshi Momea Mishkolo, that the basin was 130 weights of shekel. The 130 represents the 100 amos of the Chotzer HaMishkan, the courtyard of the Mishkan, and the 30 amos of the Mishkan, the sanctuary itself. The Shivim shekel, the next utensil was 70 shekels. That represents 70 amudim shoye b'chotzer. There was a total of 70 pillars in the courtyard of the sanctuary. Kaf achas, this ladle, represents the one Sefer Torah that was in the Oren of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then the Medrash says, Mahakaf azu yesh bo hei etzbo'us, just like this kaf. This ladle has five fingers. See, from here it seems like it was a fork. Kach hoye bei hei sforim. So does the Sefer Torah have five sforim. Asor zohov. And then the next utensil was a weight of 10 pieces of gold. Elu aluchais. This represents the Ten Commandments. The tablets of the Ten Commandments were in the Oren that Baisha received. Dov acher. And also the Medrash says that the 10 represents ten times does it state in the Parsha where we are told to build the Mishkan, ve'osu asir, you shall make. Ve'osu aroin, ve'osu kaperis, ve'osu shulchan, ve'osu menera, ve'osu amishkon, ve'osisi yeriais, ve'osisi sakroshim, ve'osisi preichis, ve'osisi mizbeach, ve'osisi chotzer amishkon. So 10 times does it mention it. That's what the weight of 10 was. So this now gives us an insight into Shimon. The third of this camp, Bayim Hashishi, the sixth day, was Nosi Livnei God El Yosef Ben Du'el. The Nosi of God, El Yosef Ben Du'el. The Medrash says, why was he Zeicha to bring his gifts immediately after Shimon? So the Medrash says, Shimon took his sword and he went and he made war with the people of Shechem because of his sister. She was a warrior. God also were warriors. Bnei God Ovru Es HaYarden, they were the ones who went across the Yarden, the Jordan River first, to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Lazo La'achehem Li'yorish Es HaOretz. Who could receive, like Moshe said on them, Tzitkes Hashem Oso Mishpotov Im Yisrael, which we will explain in a minute. What does it mean that they were also warriors and they went first? Now this is an episode that we have at the end of Parshas Matos, which we'll be reading in not too long of a time. At the end of Parshas Matos, this is in Bamidbar Lamed Aleph, Moshe had led the people out of Egypt and they were coming to the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and they were coming to the they were coming to the east bank of the Jordan River, not the disputed west bank of the Jordan River, which is on the Eretz Yisrael side, but they were coming to the east bank of the Jordan River, which was known before the state of Israel as Transjordan, the other side. And these lands were owned by Og Melech HaBoshon, Sichon Melech Emori. There were great kings, see, great kings and great nations in these lands. And when Moshe asked the people, let us go through because we're going on to Eretz Yisrael, to Eretz Canaan, instead of allowing them to go through, they came out and they declared war against Moshe and Israel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's all right, don't worry. They started the war. I'll show you how to deal with them. He says, you go and fight with them. Moshe went, and he fought with Og Melech HaBoshon and Sichon Melech Amori, and he annihilated them. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, they started the war, you won the war, the land is yours, finished. No United Nations, finished. The land is yours. So they took over these lands. And these were massive lands on the other side of the Jordan. And they were very, very fertile grazing lands. And it says, so Mikne Rav, ho ye livnei Ruven, ho livnei God. Otsumi od. Vayovai b'nei God, b'nei Reuven. It states, Reuven and God had massive cattle and sheep. And b'nei God was the one who initiated it. B'nei God came first, and then to Reuven. And he told Moshe that we would like this land instead of our territory in Eretz Yisrael. First Moshe thought that they were coming like Meraglim again. You're going to tell me that you want to stay here and not go into Eretz Yisrael. I mean, this is what the Meraglim said. Then he says, no. No, we'll go into Eretz Yisrael and we'll help conquer the land and we'll help settle everyone. But then when you divide up, give us this land. And the Chazal explained, because this also became Kodesh with Kedushas HaOretz. See? This became part of, it was annexed and became part of Eretz Yisrael and became sanctified like the land of Eretz Yisrael, where all of the Trumas and Maestras which you were obligated in Eretz Yisrael, you were obligated here also. So Moshe thought and said, look, it's not, we're not negotiating Eretz Yisrael here for Johannesburg or for New York, it's Eretz Yisrael. He says, as long as you will go into the land and you will help conquer it, and all the years it takes to settle the land, you will help your brothers. Then when it's all finished, then you can have this land. So God said, not only will we go, We'll go first. See? Not only will we go, they look forward to a good war. We'll go first. And we'll leave our wives and children and cattle here. But we will not return until the whole land is settled. And in Yeshua, Sefer Yeshua there, it says they did far more than was expected from them. Moshe didn't require them to go first. He just said they had to fight. They went first. And they stayed years and years in Eretz Yisrael until there was nothing left to fight for and everything was settled. And only after that did they return to this land, which became theirs. Now, they this is what Moshe at the end of the days gave them a brocha. In Zeisa brocha, so it states, this is in Zeisa brocha Lama Gimel Chof, Ula God Omar Boruch Marchiv God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has broadened out God because it was an enormous piece of territory. Kilovi Shochin V'Toraf, you dwelt like a young lion, like a lion, a lioness. V'Toraf, and you attacked like a lion. Zereya Avkotkeit, the arm and the head. Rashi brings, he says, firstly, since they were on the border, they had to be very strong like lions. Secondly, harogen hoyu nikorin, chet chin areishim azrei b'makachas. They were such good soldiers that they could kill someone, an enemy, by cutting off his head and arm with one swipe of the sword. Now, it's interesting. It says they were the first ones to take land because this land was ready for them before Eretz Yisrael. Kishom Chelkas Mechekik Sofun. They seem to have a special relationship with Moshe because the land that they took is where Moshe was buried. See, this is where Moshe died. And he was buried there. And Sofun is concealed. Lo yoda ish kfurasi ad yemazeh. Nobody knows where Moshe is buried, but we know they're buried in their territory. And that seems to be another reason. I mean, it seems maybe they had realized that that's what would happen, and they were very happy that they would have that territory. Vayesei roshe om, sitkas Hashem oso mishpotov im Yisrael. You did the righteousness of Hashem, and also you did what was right for Israel. In other words, they kept their oath. They took an oath that they would not return to their land until they conquered Klal Yisrael. Because of that, the Midrash says they had a special relationship with Moshe and with the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the going out of Egypt. Because the purpose of the going out of Egypt, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, is to get the Torah and to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And they were the ones who went first to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And it states that Chamushim Olu Mibnei Yisrael, that when they went out of Eretz Yisrael, they went as Chamushim. Out of Mitzrayim, they went as Chamushim. They went out as soldiers, Chalutzim, the Medrash says. This was good. They were in the forefront. So therefore they brought all of their korbanos in honor of Moshe and of the time when Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim. So, to mention a few, the Karas Keset, this basin that they brought, that was made out of silver, this was a remembrance for Yocheved, the mother of Moshe. Why? Kara comes from the word nikra, to be torn away. Yocheved was torn away from Amram. Originally, when Pareh made the decree that every male child born should be thrown into the river, So Amram separated himself from Yocheved, because they said, why should we have children only to be killed? So Karo means to be torn away, Shenikra. But Kesev, the word Kesev means desire and love. In Tilim there's a pasuk, Nichsefo v'gam kolso nafshi, that Amram returned his desire and love and took back Yocheved. And it states, Karis Kesev Achas. Achas is spelled the same as Achos. Al tikre Achas el Achos, sister. Why did he take back Yocheved? Because of the counsel of the sister, where it states Aches Aaron, she was the sister of Aaron. The Gemara says, when was she the sister of Aaron and not of Moshe? Before Moshe was born. She was the one who told them that they must reunite. They have no right to separate themselves just because of Paris decree. Mea u'shleishim, shleishim u'mea mishkola, kuf lamed, 130. Yocheved was 130 years old at that time. Kafa chasa sorazov, there was this ladle, which was the weight of 10 pieces of gold. This represents the hand of Moshe. Kaf also means a hand, who smited Egypt with 10 makis, the 10 plagues. Why do we find some of the utensils were silver and then others were gold and the later ones were gold? The same in Egypt. When they went out of Egypt, they took with them the spoils of Egypt. When they crossed the sea, they took with them the spoils of the sea. And the Chazal say, "Gedei lebizus hayam lebizus Mitzrayim." The spoils of the sea were greater than the spoils of Egypt. That's why the first utensils were silver and the later ones were gold here in these gifts. When it came to the Ole, the Korban Ole, there are three different types of animals that were brought for the Korban Ole, as mentioned. These three represent Gimel Panosim Tevim. Three great leaders were given to Klal Yisrael at that time, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. And of the three great leaders, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, it states that because of Moshe, he provided the mon. Because of Aaron, we have the Anani Akoved, the cloud of glory. Because of Miriam, we had the Be'er, the spring of water that went with Klal Yisrael in the desert. Another meaning to the Gimel Mine Eila. Gimel Midas Teva Shoyabod Beyodin Shel Yisrael BeMitzrayim UBeSchusa Nigolu. There were three great attributes that Klal Yisrael had in Egypt, and it was through this schus, these merits, that they were redeemed. Shleishino Shmom. When they were in Egypt, they never assimilated to become Egyptians. They didn't change their names. Leishinus Lashonim. They didn't change their language. Ushigodur Atzma Mina Erva. And they never mixed. There was no promiscuity amongst them where they mixed together with the Egyptians. And because of this, they always remained as an individual nation. That's what we say in the Haggadah Shohayim Mitzuyonim Shom. And because of this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to redeem them. So that's why it states the three different types were brought for the Korban Ola. And then finally, Elim Chamisha, it says in the gifts, in the Korbonas, so there was the Elim Chamisha, Aturim Chamisha, Kvosim Minei Shonor Chamisha. When it came to the Shlomim, so there were five rams and the five male goats and the five sheep. Why three times five? The three times five represents 15. And 15 is the 15th of Nisan, when the Geula, the redemption, took place. So this is what the God, the Prince of God, had in mind when he brought his gifts in honor of the going out of Egypt and Moshe Rabbeinu, that they identified with, because they were the ones who went out in the forefront to go and conquer the land of Eretz Yisrael. This gives us some insights into the second three, which were Reuven, Shimon, and God. Yitzchak, we will continue next week and see if we can manage to finish, or at least cover as many as possible.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.